school, but I can't find my shoes, and life is moving fast.
While the offering is being completed, turn to your neighbor and tell him your favorite sitcom. You got one, whatever it is, just tell him your favorite sitcom. Just take a second to do that.
There's so much left unsaid. I know that things will get better. I found my life really matters. I don't have a lot of money. My bank account is dang near funny. My kids can't get along. The principal is on my phone. My boss
okay,
is
somebody here
my
tell
neck.
Me. We've got people in all of our sites and in the hub. And somebody here tell me your favorite sitcom. What is it? I Love Lucy. What? Three's Company. All right. I'm a knock on a door. All right. Anybody over here? Like, yeah. Friends? Yeah, of course. It's a classic. Anyway, like one more. Somebody here in this middle section. Brady Bunch. Whoa, reaching it back. Okay. All right. Here's the thing. Wouldn't it be grand if all of our problems could fit into a sitcom? Man, it'd just be so great. We'd have like a theme song. We'd have a laugh track. When things got really hairy, we'd break for commercial. But we would always know at the end of the 30 minutes, everybody, we'd hug and it'd be good. Because these were simple problems. You know, Jimmy spilled gravy on Dad's favorite tie before his big meeting. Or Susie broke Mom's favorite vase. Or two girlfriends are wearing the same dress to prom. Ooh, will they talk to each other? No worries, at the end, it'll all be okay. Even when sitcoms tried to do like socially conscious things, you know what I'm talking about? They're really going to tackle that issue this week. They would always lead for the whole week long. You would hear it on TV. Stay tuned next week for a very special episode of That's So Raven. And then they would just like, even then, at the end, there would be a group hug, roll credits. Ah, we did it. One more time. Wouldn't it be grand if all of your life's problems fit into a sitcom? But they don't. And so when you hear that we are now beginning a new series entitled More Than the Good Life, some of you might just go, ooh, that sounds too easy, too cute, too, I don't know, Fast and Greg, life ain't a sitcom. It is not all Skittle rainbows and dancing unicorns from where I sit. Agreed. But that's not what Jesus is talking about. He is going to talk to us and show us a life that is, it's not just a good life, it's more than that. And I don't want us to wait any longer. So let's pray and we're going to jump in. We're going to start this new series. Father, we come before you and we are grateful for the power of worship. Many of us are grateful for the truth of what we just sang. I am grateful for your faithfulness. Lord, I'm grateful for a church that gathers and for people who really across the spectrum. Some of us are really thrilled to be here. Some of us barely made it in the door because of what we're carrying. Some of us are here as visitors and we're not really even sure what to think yet. We're not even sure we believe any of this yet. Some of us are so stinking mad right now, God, that we can barely sit in the seat. And you are so good and so present that you can handle all of us. So I'm asking now that you would just lead us through this, that we'll have a conversation together where we hear the voice of Jesus, your son, teaching us about a better way, the way, a life that we really want to live. We want to live this life. God, I ask this in the name of Jesus. Amen. Last week, if you were with us, I think our friend Stu G just kicked things off. He set the table for this. It's just so beautiful, whether it was on the weekend, and it was just, wasn't that just a sweet, sweet thing? And then those that were able to be a part of the documentary premiere, it was just a, wow, just what a weekend. And he calls it the words from the hill. We, most of us, would call it the Sermon on the Mount. Now, let's just talk about this. Why would we call it the Sermon on the Mount? Well, for obvious reasons. Let me just catch everyone up. If you go back to the first book of the New Testament, the Gospel of Matthew, okay? And if you have your Bibles, you can start turning there. We'll be in Matthew 5. But in Matthew 4, we learn that Jesus is drawing a huge crowd. This is at the height of his popularity. He's now up in the northern part of Israel. He's in a region called the Galilee. People are coming from everywhere, according to Matthew chapter 4. And then we read these words in Matthew 5. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside. This is probably on the northwest side of the Sea of Galilee, outside the fishing town of Capernaum. He went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and I love this. If you look in some, like the ESV translation, the King James, some of those translations will say, and he opened his mouth and he began to teach. I love N.T. Wright's rendering of this. He says, and Jesus took a deep breath and began to teach. So this is why we call it the Sermon on the Mount, because he's now, last week, remember, he's accommodating the crowds and he's moving up the mountainside and he now speaks words that we've been trying to figure out and cling to and live and share with each other for 2,000 years. And it is more than sitcom wisdom, which is a good thing. Our buddy Scott Sauls summarizes it this way. He says, the sheer popularity of self-help books, I want you to think right now, how many self-help books are in your possession? The sheer popularity of, some of you could start a museum. The sheer popularity of self-help books points to the reality that humans live with an insatiable longing for something more, something better. You know what that means? We want more. Now, when I say more, I don't mean the lusty more of narcissism where it's just more for more's sake, where, ooh, just give me everything. I don't mean that. I don't even mean the more of like the prosperity gospel where it's like, yeah, I just need more and more material wealth because that's what God has. Listen, that's not even biblical. No, this is, I want more of God because I need more of God. I'm expecting more of myself. I want more for my world. I'm expecting more for my friends. I want more for my family. I want more. I want more righteous work. I want more sense of purpose. I want more justice in this world. I want more love, more laughter, more hope, more. I want more. Well, the good news is Jesus is now going to begin to teach us in a way where he shows us a more than good life. And I must warn you, as we go through this in the coming weeks, we're going to tackle some things that are in the Sermon on the Mount. We're going to talk about things like anger and lust and our money and prayer and anxiety. And what are we going to do with our enemies? And we're just going to go there. And here's the question. I was thinking of that when I woke up today. When we're finished with this series, it'll be like almost Thanksgiving. When we're finished with this series, the weather will have changed. It'll be cool. We will probably have had some cold days. We will have already experienced the fall. The leaves here in the Midwest will have turned a beautiful color and then fallen from the trees. A lot will have changed by the time we get to the end of this series. What I was wondering this morning when I was thinking about it is, I wonder if we'll change. I wonder if we can look back on this series and go, you know what? I changed. Something happened. Something began to just start to morph and transition in my life. And I get it. That's my prayer for us, because Jesus is inviting us into something extraordinary. But for us to do that, we have to start somewhere. And so where we'll start is really with this idea of how do we read this? How do we understand this? The clue is right up here on the screen. Jesus is talking to his disciples. Now, there's a crowd that has gathered, but he's talking to his disciples. Just so you're clear on this, that doesn't mean the 12 disciples, the famous 12 disciples that you have heard about. Matthew doesn't even name them until chapter 10. When you hear disciples right now, you need to think these are the early, early followers of Jesus. These are the people that are just beginning to figure him out. And by the way, they do not have him all figured out. You've got to put yourself in this moment. This is real time. Jesus, his identity, who he is, it's unfolding before their eyes, and they're trying to keep up. But he is saying, if you trust me, this is what life with me looks like. This is what it's going to look like. I want to show you how these are people who are looking to Jesus, and he's showing them a better life. Does that mean that the crowd is excluded? No, Jesus knows they're there. They're always there. He uses this as a way to invite them further in. I'm going to talk to the people who trust me, but I want the rest of you to listen in. Now, by the way, if you're paying attention, that's how it works around here. There are times that I will zero in on skeptics and cynics, and we'll talk about something, and it'll just, like those of you who are longtime believers will go, I don't care about that. Why? I already believe. Well, you ought to be listening, because this will help you in your conversations with others. But there are also times where we will zero in on, hey, this is what it's like to follow Jesus. And I know that the crowd is listening in because this is now offered to you. So we will now go into this knowing that Jesus is speaking to those who follow him. But for those of you who are kind of like on the edges checking this thing out, listen up, because this could be for you. But it all begins with what are called the Beatitudes. Now, the Beatitudes is a weird name. It really is a Latin word, and it's not in the Bible. In a Latin translation of the Bible, many, many centuries later, that Latin word for blessed, which you're going to see pop up many times, is the word in Latin, beati. These are the Beatitudes. That's what these are. That's what this means. I want you to now put yourself on a hillside 2,000 years ago. I want you to listen now as Jesus. These are the words of Jesus. Listen now. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, this is the word of God. We're going to unpack some of this. But let me just help those of you who are visiting for the first time, those of you who do this all the time. I know how you think. You're looking here and you're counting eight Beatitudes and you're going, oh, an 8-point message, great. And you're going to do the math and you're going to pay attention to how much I spend on the first beatitude, and then you're going to times that times eight, and you think you know how long this is going to go. Well, let me help you with that. We're not even covering all eight of these. We don't have time to do a deep dive on all eight. I'm really just going to show you three of them that people over time. In fact, this week we surveyed a bunch of people in an earlier service. We surveyed like over 200 people, told us these are the ones that we struggle with. So let's go over those three. I want you to learn how to handle the Beatitudes, okay? And apply them to your life. The first thing you got to know is that word blessed. The word blessed there is a difficult word to translate. There are many, many scholars who have written many, many pages in many, many commentaries, a lot of which I have read recently and before now, and I am not going to burden you with all of those comments. Let me just say this. The Greek word for blessed is the word makarios, and it is a difficult word to render in English. It's just like this multifaceted, big, fat word, and we don't really have a word that really fully describes it. And so some people say, well, we ought to just call it happy. Happy are those who mourn. And there is something to that, but that feels a little too shallow for some of us. Okay, we want the joy, but there's got to be more. Some people would say, well, God's favor is on those people. That's true. It doesn't roll off the tongue as well as blessed. So we're going to stick with blessed. But understand this. It's not the blessing, okay? It's not just a blessing, even though those are beautiful. In the Old Testament, you will see people bless God. You will see people bless one another. Those are important, beautiful moments. That's not really where this word goes back to. Now, there are some scholars like Jonathan Pennington who say the best thing to do is to understand the times in which Jesus lived, Aristotle being before him. And part of what we need to do is to understand Aristotle was writing about what is translated as flourishing. Really, the word he used there, we won't go into it. I won't bore you with it. But it's this idea that life grows and it thrives and it flourishes. So here's what I would ask you to think of. What Jesus is now going to describe to you is a God-centered flourishing. It's life that grows and thrives and prevails. It doesn't just survive, it prevails against all odds. Have you ever seen, you've been walking past an old, maybe it's an old stone wall, maybe it's a pavement, maybe you're out in the desert somewhere, and you look and there is just no way, you cannot explain what you are seeing, but what you see is a plant or a tree that has somehow found a gap and pushed its way through, and it is thriving in a place that you can't even hardly imagine that it's thriving. I want you to understand Jesus is describing a kind of flourishing in situations and spaces that most people would say that ain't gonna happen. Now, Jesus is not telling you to go out and get yourself persecuted. Jesus is not saying, go out and see if you can find something to mourn about, and then you'll feel God's presence. Because I agree with Stu last week when he said, think of blessing as and the blessedness as the presence of God. It's enjoying the presence of God. But what Jesus is doing on this hillside is he's talking to 8 different groups of people that are already in these categories. He's talking to people that are already landing in some of these buckets. Now listen to me, in our church, across everyone who's listening, online, in physical spaces here, there are many of you that if we went through all 8 of these, you could go, yep, I'm in that bucket. Yep, that's me. Yep, that's me. And by the way, if you, none of these apply to you, just wait a little while. One of them will. But what Jesus is doing is pronouncing a blessedness on people who thought they were out of options, out of hope. They weren't cared for. They were ignored and oppressed. And there might have even been people in their midst who are saying, God really doesn't care about you. Look at what you're going through. Jesus says, I couldn't disagree more. Blessed are you who are in these categories. The presence of God is with you. Look to him. Look to me. I am telling you there is a better way. Now, how does this work? Well, to be honest with you, it doesn't. Without God. Remember, he's talking to people who have turned towards Jesus. They are clinging and saying, there has to be more to this. What Jesus is saying, because it doesn't work this way in the world. If Jesus is saying this is the truth about everything, then he got it wrong. Because I'm telling you, those who are in mourning don't always get comforted. I'm telling you, the meek don't always inherit the land. I'm telling you that those who are persecuted do not always sense a kind of blessedness in it. You can't say, well, yep, that's just the truth about life. That's not the way to look at the Beatitudes. You have to factor in God. That's where Aristotle missed it. It's not about ethics and virtue. Those are great things to talk about. This is about an interactive, dynamic relationship with the God of the universe. That's where you find this settledness, this I can't be rocked out of it. That's where you find a life in these upside down spaces. It's all about God being on your side. You must remember that. Take that out of the equation and none of this works. God is on their side. These are people who are looking to God to make things right one day in the future. They are trusting God. I believe you're gonna settle this. You're gonna finish the story well for me. But they are stuck in the in-between. They're in the real now, right here. And they are still clinging to God. Please, please. And Jesus says, I've got good news for those of you who are in the upside down spaces. Well, now let's just look at 3 of these and let me just see if we can just begin to see how to read these. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, poor there in the Greek is a word which means it's the strongest word for poverty in the Greek language. So first of all, just understand this is abject poverty. This is the kind of poverty that strips you of everything. You have zip. You have nothing. It has completely taken everything away. There is nothing. The word there is actually connected to a word for cowering. It's a word where you get low, where you're just so, you won't even make eye contact with people. You ever seen that kind of poverty? I have. In the back streets of Varanasi, India, I've seen that kind of poverty. In streets that are no wider than this, you come across people who literally have nothing. In some cases, I remember one man who had a loincloth. That's all he owned. Hungry, struggling, diseased, cowering, not making eye contact, and begging for anything. That's the Greek word here. It is abject poverty. It is all torn away. Is Jesus saying that kind of poverty is good? No. We know what Jesus thinks about poverty. He hates it. He loves the poor. He hates what it's doing to people. What Jesus is saying, for those of you who will turn to me, for those of you who will cling to God, even in a moment like that, blessed are you because you are not alone. Blessed are you. You are a citizen of the kingdom. Blessed are you because there is coming a day when you will be honored and things will be made right. And I know this sounds so, it's just so difficult, but Jesus is saying in the in-between time, while you're waiting, you will experience the presence of the Father in a way the likes of which other people will never know. Turn to him. Blessed are you in those moments, and he will come. You will know more about God than a whole bunch of other people who have a whole lot more. Blessed are you. But it says, poor in spirit. Now, we will not go into the socioeconomic background of that word, but some scholars say it can mean economic poverty and spiritual poverty. So let's talk about this other side here. Everything I described about poverty, about abject, I got nothing. You ever been there? Forget about money. I'm not talking about money now. I'm talking about the rest of your life. You ever been there in a moment where it was all stripped away from you and you go, I don't have an answer. I don't have an idea. I don't have anything to throw at this problem, this struggle, this thing that I'm going through. I am out of options. You ever been there? You got nothing. What do I do? Jesus says, when you and I can get to a place where in that kind of poorness of spirit, we are driven to our knees in that kind of dire need for help. Blessed are you because God does his best work in a space like that. When you will admit, God, I got nothing, that's when he does his best work. But that's tricky for us because we like to convince ourselves that we got it going on. We like to convince ourselves, and mostly we like to convince other people. I got it. How you doing? I'm fine. How are you? We just flip it back on someone else, don't we? Yeah, I can do this. I'm a man. What are you talking about? It's kind of like, any of you guys ever done karaoke? You know what I'm talking about? How many of you, show of hands everywhere, how many of you have ever done karaoke before? It's okay. Yeah. How'd it go? Great, Greg. Like, I guarantee you, if I were to ask people right now who wants to do karaoke, there would be so many people that would just go, I got it. Let me try it. I can do that. And I'm just going to say this in all love. A couple of you would crush it, but most of you, not so much. Here's the thing about karaoke. It convinces you with all of the externals that you actually have more than you have. Because you got the microphone. You got a crowd. You got like background music that is just going to make you, it's going to help you because, man, I sing this song all the time in the shower. I have got this. You ever watch somebody walk up to a stage somewhere and you could tell by the look on their eyes, this is not going to end well? They have not done the fearless inventory that you need to do to go, okay, can I do this or not? And then you end up and he's walking up there and you hear something like this, you know, it's just like, now I've had the time of my life, though I've never felt this way before. Yes, I swear. And what's the problem is his wife or his girlfriend or his buddies are going, you sound great, man, keep going. And I know it's all for you, because I... And it's just a train wreck waiting to happen. So what... Yeah, thank you for that. You know, we went with Post Malone in an earlier service and then Blanco Brown, but I decided on this one, we'd just do the classic. So, what was the point, by the way? Do you guys remember? Here's the point. There are externals, a soundtrack, a microphone. Sometimes you even have people who are playing along with the lie. And the sad truth is, somebody forgot to check whether they had any talent or not. So the externals were all there, but there was nothing internally that was matching up. What I'm saying to you when it comes to your spiritual life is, don't get seduced Don't get seduced by the externals. Don't get seduced by all those things that you think will trick you and everyone else into thinking that you've got it when you don't really have it. Jesus says, blessed are you when you get to the end of you. It's a pretty vulnerable moment. I will say for those of us, for a lot of us, let's just say. Guys, we stink at this, but for a lot of us. Blessed are you when you get to the end of you and say, I can't do this. Because God does his best work. He'll move in close. The presence of God shows up. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. By far, whenever we've asked people and surveyed people, this is the number one, this is the one people have the most trouble with because it just sounds so wrong. It's so, what are you talking, really, Jesus, really? I'm blessed when I'm in mourning? Now listen to me. When you're going through a struggle, when you're going through a season or a storm of loss, when you are mourning the loss of something, Jesus is not saying here that that's a blessing in disguise. I think that's the wrong semantics. Jesus is straight up telling you, this is an explicit admission that life in this world is going to, it's going to push you around at times. It's going to do something at times. You're going to experience loss because something is not going to go the way you want it to. Something is not going to happen the way you thought it would. You're going to lose a relationship. You're going to lose a person. You're going to lose an opportunity, and you will be thrown into a season of mourning. Now, depending on how big of a deal that is, it could be for a day. It could be for an hour. It could be for a prolonged season. But Jesus says in those moments, there is a blessedness that can show up. We need to talk about this for just a second. The first thing I would have you to do at the very top of the funnel of this conversation is admit the hurt. In some ways, we're right back to the previous one. You have to admit that you are hurting. You have to admit that there is something, a cost that is being exacted from your soul because you care. Oftentimes we try to just do this superficial thing where we try to convince people, no, I'm okay. I don't need your help. I don't want your help. I'm not comfortable with the attention. I'm okay. I've got this. And it's a lie. We tell lies to ourselves. We tell lies to others. And here's what really bothers me. We who are Christians are sometimes the worst offenders. We like use these Christian-y terms, and we like people to think that we're, you know, we kind of just, you know, stick our chest out into the wind, and we picture this cape flapping behind us, and I'm a superhero of my faith. I have got this. You don't have it. I don't have it. You got to have the guts to stay in the conversation long enough to actually listen and express what you're going through. Now, some of us right now are mentally saying, I just checked out. Man, I don't want to go through this. This is a downer. I need you to know this is the reality of the Beatitudes. This is how it works. Part of what Jesus is saying here is admit what you're struggling with. I am so frustrated with a kind of teaching that is out there that says, not only do you have to just pretend this way, you can't even say it out loud, because if you say it out loud, you'll make it worse. In fact, you just have to say things that you want to happen. You just got to say positive things. Don't you ever say anything about how you're really struggling. Nothing could be further from the truth. Blessed are those who admit the struggle and cling to God. You see how, like, different that is than the superficial way we live. We live in a world, according to the Bible, that is stained and polluted by sin. And sometimes we are the ruined ones. And there will be moments where our hearts are the ones that are broken. But when we come to God with our open hands and our heavy hearts, Jesus says, I will give you my presence. You will not be alone. I will give you, watch this. One of the ways God will give you his presence is through the community of other loving followers. So you don't do this alone. And that means we can grieve without giving in to hopelessness. Now, God led us to this series back in July. We've been planning this now for a few months. We knew what we were talking about today, months ago. And I am continually amazed of his timing. For some of us, we've been rocked by news that we didn't want to hear this week. And then I hear others of you going, well, this is what I'm going through, and this is what I'm going through. I need to push pause for just 1 second and say something that we say from time to time around here, but we will not give in to the hopelessness that is an epidemic in this world. We will not give in to the lies of the evil one who says there is no hope and there is no way out. Listen to me. If you are struggling today with thoughts of hopelessness, if you think this is the end of the end, I understand that there is a struggle. I understand that there are many factors involved going on in your family, in the past, struggles with depression, addiction. I understand that there are many things that fold into this, but there is help. There is a way out. You may not even feel like there's hope, but you start by knowing that there is help, and you cannot do this alone. I want everyone, I don't care what you're doing. Some of you are checking your watch. Some of you are typing something to somebody. Some of you are keeping notes. I need everybody right now to make eye contact with me. And literally, those of you in the rooms, please listen to me on this point. If you are going through a moment right now where you are entertaining the thought of anything that even remotely smacks of self-destruction, you got to ask for help now. Now, it's not too late. You reach out to a friend, you text your counselor, you look to somebody right now and say, this conversation starts as soon as this is over with, but I will get help now. If you need a Christian counselor, we'll help you. If you need a physician that can talk to you, if you need to talk to a pastor, if you need to call your sponsor, I am saying ask for help now. We will resist the lies of the evil one. He has taken too much ground already. And for those of you who are pastors, for those of you who are counselors, for those of you who are coaches and teachers and mentors and sponsors and parents and friends, you listen well when someone says, I need some help. Walk with them. This is also the way of the kingdom. When Jesus says we are blessed in these moments, he does not say that there's an absence of pain. There is pain. And yet we do not lose hope. And yet he brings us through this. And I have seen it and I have heard stories this weekend. God is on the move and we will do this together. But I will tell you, it's not always this raging sadness. Some of us who mourn, we swing from sad to angry and back again. It is a thing. And I will tell you, a storm that has settled in on my life and some of our lives recently, I swing from sad to mad like that. You need to know, if you explore the scriptures, what you will see is people asking God and expressing hard, difficult questions and emotions to God. And it's not the cynics and it's not the skeptics. It's the people who trust him. It's David. It's Jesus. It's Jeremiah, who had a really tough assignment, telling a people about something that was going to happen. And not only did they not believe him, they mocked him, they persecuted him, they isolated him, they tried to kill him. This guy had a tough gig. If you look in Jeremiah 15, you see him pouring his heart out. And what does he say? You know what I'm facing, Eternal One. Remember me and pay attention to my plight. Why does the pain never end? Why does this wound never heal? Will you be to me as deceptive and unreliable as a dry stream to a thirsty man? Jeremiah felt the freedom to pour his heart out to the God he trusted. He did it respectfully, but he did it authentically. God, where are you? God, what do I do? And it is in those moments that something powerful begins to happen. I am explaining to you something mysterious that some of you will be tempted to just walk away from and say, I don't want that much of God. Listen to me carefully. You need that much of God. There'll be moments in your life when you need that much of God. But as Jeremiah is pouring his heart out, God the Father is just that, the Father. He is a loving Father who listens to the pouring out of the anger and doesn't go anywhere. His presence is the blessing. And if you keep reading, when you've poured out all the tears and all the words you can, in that out of breath, panting silence when, I mean, you have just said, God, I got nothing else to say to you. Then listen. Because you are in a very special part of your spiritual journey. The God of the universe who loves you will move in close and speak in those silent breaks. Sometimes all he's speaking is, I'm with you, I hear you. Sometimes he's reminding you that he knows what it's like to be betrayed. He knows what it's like to lose a loved one. He knows what it's like. Sometimes he will just remind you of the story. He will remind you of how much he loves you. But listen, because the presence of God is close, there is a blessedness that starts to sink in when you are honest about your mourning. In the, like, just mere verses later, Jeremiah says, O eternal one, you are my strength, my fortress, my sanctuary in times of trouble. Is this even the same person? It is. You see, God will meet you in the middle of this. God will meet you in these woozy swings from one extreme to the other. But it is in the middle of our fatigue, it is in the middle of those thoughts that kind of start to get very pessimistic, that God says, let me move in close. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. You're comforted with the fact that God has the end of the story. He's got it. And for some of us, we look to the end and go, you need to set this to right. I am done with these injustices. I am done with this pain. And listen to me, there is hope that is, you can cling to that. I cling to Revelation 7. God will wipe away all tears. You kidding me? I'm banking on it. But in the in-between time, I will cling to the God who promises in my struggle to be with me. And for those of you who have never been through a storm like that, I'm telling you, he is enough. I am not saying that it's one clean shot. I'm not saying that you're over. It's like, oh, there he is, now I'm better. I'm telling you, all weekend long, I have heard from people who have said, so I lost her years ago, and I just heard a song, and those waves of grief came crashing back in. I've seen parents, I've seen people, I've seen, it's not just like losing someone in death. Some of you right now are going through a struggle with your health. Some of you have an injury that just robbed you of something immediately. Some of you are in the free fall of unemployment or the free fall of retirement and you're going, what do I do now? Some of you are losing a relationship. Some of you have carefully crafted a world and one piece is out and now the whole thing feels like it's gonna fall apart. Blessed are you in those moments when you will cry out and admit, God, I need you. God, come close, because he will. He will. This is a mysterious moment, and I want you to pay attention to it. But when you are out of all options and you cry out to him, pay attention, because these are the moments when your faith grows deep. Sounds crazy, doesn't it? But that's what Jesus is saying. Frederick Buechner says that faith isn't like believing a list of things about God. It's not like properties. Well, God, you are this, and God, you are this, and God, you are this, and I believe, and I have faith. That's not faith. That's a religion class. Faith is, he says, more like hearing a voice that says, come unto me, all you who are weary, and I will give you rest. He says faith is standing in the darkness, and a hand is there, and you take it. And then you just take the next step after that. I don't know what you're going through. I don't know the struggles. I don't know the doubts. I don't know the ache. I don't know the longing. I don't pretend to know all of that. What I will tell you is that the God of the universe is coming in close, and the God of the universe is there if you'll take that step. If you'll reach out, you do not have to face this alone. You simply do not have to face this alone. In the valley of the shadows, I feel him walking with me. He's there. And now I can take the next step. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the peacemakers, because they will be called children of God. It doesn't say peace fakers. It doesn't say blessed are those who act like everything's all hunky-dory so we can just kind of keep moving through life. No, blessed are the peacemakers who go, uh-oh, we got to deal with this. Or maybe, can I help you guys deal with this? You move into the chaotic, difficult spaces and you bring peace and you're a broker of shalom and you're one of those people and you know it's gonna cost you something. But God, please, can we do this? Jesus says in those moments, you'll be called a child of God. Now, some of us are so protective of grace that we're like, ooh, this sounds like you're earning your way into heaven. Is that what this is? Is that one of those keys? No. This is always, always, always about grace. Our whole story goes back to grace, the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. You know that. It's why we just sang Grace to Grace. You know this. But Jesus calls it out and says something is so important about making peace that when you do it, when you do it, it's a family trait. Leon Morris puts it like this. He says, there is something especially godlike in bringing peace to people and bringing people to peace. You see, if you will enter the chaos and if you will be one of those people who is a peacemaker, Jesus says you will bear a family resemblance. In that moment, you're going to remind people of your father. He keeps going. He talks about persecution, and then he begins to make it very personal. Picture this. I don't think this was an ethics class. I don't think this was a philosophy class. I don't think this was like all intellectual. I think this was intensely personal. I don't know if it feels that way to you, but it was intensely personal. This is me talking. It's not in the Greek. But I wonder if there wasn't a moment when Jesus got up and didn't move around. Or maybe if the crowd was in tight, he didn't have to. But I believe he's making eye contact with people. And he knows their stories. He knows everything about them. Somebody who's lost someone. Somebody who's struggling, somebody who's having a hard time coming to the end of themselves, somebody who's hungering for things to be made right, somebody who really is being persecuted, somebody who's being called all sorts of names because they're trying to make peace. I mean, he's looking around the crowd and he's saying, blessed are you, blessed are you, blessed are you, blessed are you. I know what you're going through, blessed are you. The presence of God is settling in. This is life with me. He's inviting everyone else. Do you see what this is like? Come on and join us. Now, I know it seems upside down. Tom Wright says, maybe this is right side up. Maybe with Jesus, now we have a chance. It's right after this. If you think about it, right here, he's going through this list of all of these different people. Blessed are you if you are out of options and you're destitute. Blessed are you who are showing mercy to others. Blessed are you who are sorrowful. Blessed are you who want things to be made right. Blessed are you who are making peace. Blessed are you who are being persecuted. Blessed are you who are trying to live with an undivided, pure heart. The presence of God is with you. Jesus is saying, this is life flourishing. This is life in the hard spaces. This is life in the upside down world. And my question to you is, what if we lived that way? Those of us who believe, I mean, what if we really lived that way? What if we found comfort for this moment and courage for the next moment, and it was all tied to the presence of Almighty God in your life? What if you got to a place where you went, man, he's not just good, he is there, and he is strong, and he is on my side. Wouldn't that be something? We could push back darkness in this dark and decaying world. No show of hands here, but it's right after this that Jesus says something to a dark world, and I'm guessing most of us would agree this world is dark. It's right on the tail of the Beatitudes. It's just like, doesn't even take a breath. He just says, you are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. We are not teaching another lesson here. We're not even skipping over this. We've taught about this so many times. If you know how important salt was to the ancient world, Jesus is saying, then do that, be that. Don't be useless. Don't be irrelevant, because then you'll get tossed aside and you're nothing more than road grit. Jesus says, be a change agent in this world. Push back darkness. Be light. I didn't ask for a show of hands, but anybody here agree that we live in a darkened world? In Matthew 4, right before this, we hear those famous words quoted from the prophet Isaiah, those living in darkness have seen a great light. Well, what was that talking about? Well, ultimately what it was talking about was Jesus. You see, this whole thing had to do with Messiah breaking into the story. And now the darkness is being pushed back by the light. Now the kingdom is advancing. Jesus is telling his disciples, you're about to be launched into the world and you will be persecuted and there will be loss and they will say bad things about you and there are going to be people that strip you of your resources. But blessed are you because you're not alone. I've got this. I'm with you. And the connection that I began to make in my own life was he said this right after the Beatitudes. When he says be salt and light, it's like there's no break. I'm wondering, what if there's a connection? What if you and I are supposed to actually to live our life in this upside down place? And the way we live our life in the upside down place is one of the ways that we push back darkness. Does it make sense? I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with this. We need all of this. But in my own life, I was like, wow, so maybe it's not about preaching sermons to a whole bunch of people. Maybe it's not about us worshiping together as thousands of people giving glory to God, even though that is a part of it and we love it. Maybe it's not always just about global initiatives or community-wide initiatives, as great and glorious and as important as they are. Maybe it's not just about writing songs or creating new beauty in this world. Maybe it's not always about leading thousands of people or raising up young leaders. Maybe it's not about all of those things. All of those things are important and we need to lock arms to push against the darkness. But what I began to understand this week of all weeks was, what if one of the ways that you and I will push back darkness in this world isn't like nobody's going to write a book about it? It isn't that big. It isn't that. It's just one faithful life clinging to God in the hard spaces and trusting his faithfulness. What if it were that? You don't have all the answers. I don't either. None of us has a remedy for all of these global problems. But what if Jesus was saying to you today, let's push back darkness by being faithful to the faithful one. In the upside down place, I will trust him and his mighty presence will be enough for me to take that step. And then by his grace, I'll take the one after that. One day, one moment, one step at a time. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.